آپ ہیں ایس بی ایس ہندی کے ساتھ اور خبروں کے لیے جائیں sbs.com.au/hindi پر۔
دوستو آج آپ کو ملواتے ہیں آسٹریلیا کے برائٹسٹ مائنڈز میں گنے جانے والی ایک بھارتیہ سے، پروفیسر سندھیا پاہوجا میلبرن لا اسکول کے انسٹیٹیوٹ فار انٹرنیشنل لا اینڈ ہیومینٹیز کی ڈائریکٹر ہیں۔ دنیا بھر کے کئی اوارڈز جیت چکی پروفیسر پاہوجا انٹرنیشنل لا کی وشو پرسدھ ایکسپرٹ ہیں اور حال ہی میں انہیں پرتشٹھت اکیڈمی آف دا سوشل سائنسز ان آسٹریلیا کا سدسیہ چنا گیا۔ لیکن ان کی ایک پہچان اور ہے جو ان ساری پہچانوں کے سمانانتر چلتی ہے، وہ من سے بھارتیہ ہیں، اور اس سے کیا فرق پڑتا ہے انہیں سے جانتے ہیں۔ تو سندھیا بہت شکریہ ہم سے بات چیت کرنے کے لیے، ہمیں سمے دینے کے لیے۔ ہم شروعات کرنا چاہیں گے آپ کی جرنی سے۔ آپ کی جرنی کیا رہی ہے، آپ یہاں تک کیسے پہنچے ہیں؟
So, میں ایکچولی انگریزی میں بول دیں گے، اف دیٹس اوکے۔ سو ایکچولی آئی واز بورن ان آسٹریلیا، مائی پیرنٹس مائگریٹڈ ہیئر وین مائی مدر واز پریگننٹ وتھ می ان دا 1970s، اینڈ سو آئی ایم ٹیکنیکلی ناٹ اے مائگرنٹ، بٹ آئی ہیو اے وائکیریس ایکسپیرینس آف مائگریشن تھرو مائی مام اینڈ ڈیڈ۔ سو دیٹس دا فرسٹ پارٹ آف دا اسٹوری۔ اینڈ ایکچولی واٹ وی ڈیڈنٹ ریئلائز انٹل quite recently, in the last sort of 10-15 years, when we watched a documentary on SBS, we didn't realize that when my parents migrated to Australia, actually the White Australia policy was still on foot, and they were part of a small number of migrants who were sort of given visas as a way for the Australian government to show the world that they were not being racists. And that clutch of migrants all tended to be Indian doctors educated in Britain. So when my parents arrived here, there were basically very, very few other Indians. And my experience growing up was being the only Indian in my school, the only Indian at Melbourne Law School, as far as I can recall. So having very few Indian role models in senior positions in the law, certainly.
How much of yourself you consider an Indian still?
I think I'm very Indian, actually, in the sense that I can't let go of the concerns that formed me. So all of my formation was really living in quite a hybrid identity. So my mum and dad both came from India, and dad's family had been refugees during partition to India. And so I think I could never have a sense of the world that wasn't deeply influenced by those experiences. In that sense, I'm very Indian as well as being very Australian.
What were your challenges then? Because you were born here and yet you had so many migrant experiences. What were your challenges?
So I think I've been really blessed, in part because my parents worked so hard to give my sister and me every opportunity. I know that sounds like a bit of a cliche, but there was never any material worry or anything, which is not the case for most migrants. And that's mostly because mum and dad were professionals and were able to practice here. Watching mum and dad's experiences in Australia was probably the main site of an experience of being an outsider in this country rather than a direct experience. So mum found it very difficult in the beginning to establish herself because women were struggling more in the 1970s, but certainly brown professional women wearing saris and having a choti and everything were really considered to be very peculiar by Australian standards.
Did you face that dilemma that you were not white?
So I never forgot that I wasn't white. I remember when I went to study in Canada in about 1997 that I saw an Indian woman reading the news on television wearing a salwar kameez, and I just had such a shock of pleasure in a way that there could be a woman just wearing a salwar without being remarked upon. So when I was growing up in Australia, it would never be unremarked upon that I was not in quotation marks Australian. And so people always used to say, oh, you look like India and I do. And I would say, well, actually I don't look like India and I do, but it's only because you don't know any other Indians that you think we all look like that. So you can't forget that you're not white in Australia, but mm-hmm. I can't say that any opportunity has been denied to me because of my skin colour. I suppose when I was younger, I limited my own ambitions in a way because I couldn't find role models that looked like me. So when I was thinking what to do after law school, I remember thinking, well, should I go to the bar and be a barrister? But it felt like it would be such an uphill battle because there was nobody like me in those fields. And so to that extent, the fact that I love to study and am really a scholar by inclination, I'm a way that the university is always sort of socially more diverse than other sectors of society in a certain kind of way, I think probably influenced my decision also to be an academic.
You said there were no role models when you were growing up. Mm-hmm. But now there are. People like you are there who could be role models for youngsters.
Yeah.
So what will you tell them?
So now that's a great point, because now Australia has changed a lot. And so I suppose that one of the things that is important to me is to take up the responsibility of being a person who has achieved something and looks different to the mainstream. So I always try to mentor students coming through, and a lot of Indian students come and talk to me, not only Indian students but migrant students of all kinds, and I always try to both be frank with them about the existence of racism and also to say, but that don't let that define you and don't let that make you angry or bitter. Just think about the ways that there might be, you know, everybody has different challenges, and challenges for migrants just take a particular form. And so the best way to inhabit a space where you come from a migrant background is to know that you're not imagining things, but that also it doesn't mean that all roads are closed. It just sometimes means that you need to push on and have a sense of fortitude and also have a strong sense of solidarity with other people rather than be competitive with other people.
You are a lawyer. Poverty has been one of the main focus of your work. How did that happen?
So my field of specialty is international law. So international law touches on international economic law and development and human rights. And I guess when you said to me, do I think of myself as Indian or Australian, that my early experiences travelling backwards and forwards between Australia and India probably shaped very strongly where I have taken my own scholarly and political interests. And so I probably wouldn't describe myself as being interested in poverty as much as inequality. But I guess coming from the background that I came from in terms of the family history of migration and, you know, coming from an imperial India, basically, that those experiences have shaped my interest and pushed me towards both the international and the question of global inequality, which was so marked as an experience of moving between India and Australia when we were young.
Do you think that world is heading in the right direction as far as eradicating poverty is concerned, eradicating inequality is concerned?
The statistics would say not. The statistics would say that inequality is growing, environmental damage is increasing, and yet the main way that those in power seek to tackle these problems are through continued economic growth, which has a fairly strong correlation to environmental degradation, and the idea that technology and technological advance will save us from that. So I think that if we are going to improve the state of the world, we need a model where we focus more on the idea that endless economic growth is not the way to lift people out of poverty, but that we need to think harder about what we have created, which is a machine which increases inequality and takes our attention away from the question of distribution and keeps saying the way that we are happy is to acquire more stuff, and the way that people will be lifted out of poverty is to keep growing the economic pie. I don't think either of those two things are going to be the solution to the world's problems, and I think that there are many, many people out there who struggling against inequality and also trying to live in ways that are less taxing on the earth. And those are the examples that we need to look for. They're not coming from the powerful. They're coming precisely from the people that the powerful would kind of deride. So this new politics of division, in a sense, is trying to distract our attention from the way away from the fact that we've produced an economic model which increases inequality and increases the burden on the earth. And instead of directing our attention toward distribution, many people in power are encouraging us to distrust our neighbour, which I think is a problem.
What about India? India is a peculiar nation in that way, one of the poorest nations, one of the most unequal nations. And as far as the politics is concerned right now, there is a political upheaval going on, I would say. What do you reckon where India is going?
I think that the India that I love is the India which is plural and constitutionally secular, and which values the diversity of people in India. And I've always had so much affection and actually always thought that India got it right in a way that many Western so-called developed nations didn't get it right, in terms of its appreciation of diversity and the capacity for people of such different kinds to live together in harmony. So I think it's very distressing that the current Indian government is trying to foster division rather than make use of its parliamentary majority in the lower house to tackle some of the kind of more fundamental economic problems that are going on. So inequality is growing in India. It's not the only country in which economic inequality is growing, but it is a place in which the gap between rich and poor has much more tragic consequences than in developed countries, simply because the floor of the poor is so low already. But I think I read somewhere recently that in India, 70 people each day become millionaires, at the same time as, you know, 65 million people can't access the most basic forms of healthcare. So I think that it would be better if Indian politics spent less time trying to focus on fomenting division and addressing sort of imagined problems of sectarian division, and more time tackling the growth of inequality.
Do you travel to India often?
I have travelled to India often. I used to go every year, and I haven't been for the last couple of years, but I intend to go again very soon. And I have lots of PhD students from India and a lot of academic connections with India.
And what's your emotional connection with India? Is it via food or traffic, some people say? What's your connection?
So I used to have a blog which I've just revived called Indian-ish. Mm-hmm. And Indian-ish is all about food. And I have so much love for Indian food in particular. Every week I spend a day with my parents cooking and taking photos for my blog and recording all of the recipes, so that we can record Nani Ji's recipes and Amma Ji's recipes and Mum and Dad's own recipes. So food would be a huge axis of connection for me with India, and hopefully it will be one that my daughter will share with me as well.
Do your children speak the language?
My daughter is a Nanya. She speaks to Nani Nana in Hindi a little bit, but not very well.
Okay.
Because my husband doesn't really speak Hindi, so hopefully she'll learn it a bit more. They're trying to teach her properly.
Okay. Well, it's an honor talking to you, Sandhya. Thank you so much for sparing time, and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, Vivek. Lovely to speak to you.
आपका समुदाय, आपकी बातें, SBS हिंदी. ऐसी ही और कहानियां सुनना चाहते हैं? Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify या फिर जहां आप podcast सुनते हैं, वहां हम हैं.